It is Friday, November 23rd, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter will hold its Fresh Start Art Auction Thursday, November 29th, from 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. at Serendipity in downtown Rogers. This fundraiser will feature works from professional artists as well as the shelter's art program. More information is available on the web at nwaws.org.
Support for KUAF is provided by contributing listeners and by Malco Theaters, offering the gift of entertainment all year round for all occasions. Malco gift cards and gift books available at all locations and online at malco.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, why today is Fibonacci Day. Hint, write down today's date as a number. A preview of the top tech for the holiday season, and the Fort Smith Symphony is already set for Christmas.
First, your television set will soon have a distinct University of Arkansas influence. Two graduates with Masters of Fine Arts degrees from the U of A are behind a pair of anticipated series. Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson has more.
Two recent graduates of the University of Arkansas program in Creative Writing and Translation MFA program are making waves in the screenwriting business. The program in Creative Writing and Translation was recently named a top-ranked creative writing program by the trade publication Poets and Writers. Nick Pizzolatto, a fiction graduate from 2005, got his break when two of his short stories were published in The Atlantic. And soon after that, his debut novel, Galveston, was published to high acclaim. And it was optioned for film. Pizzolatto decided he wanted to get into film writing, so he began writing for the AMC series The Killing. Though that show is no longer on the air, Pizzolatto is currently in production of a two-year series that he has sold to HBO, starring Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. The show is called True Detectives, and it's slated to begin airing in 2013. Pizzolatto, who grew up in both New Orleans and Lake Charles, Louisiana, had always wanted to be a storyteller. And he was always drawn to screenwriting. But growing up far from either of the coasts where anything happens in film or television, he wasn't sure how to get there.
I always wanted to be a storyteller and to have an audience for my voice. I suppose, you know, as a kid, like any child of the 20th century who's creative, film and television was very appealing, but there were always these class boundaries, you know, between that industry and what I do. You know, I grew up in South Louisiana, always went to public schools and stuff like that for my college education. And film requires money. It requires that you live on one of the coasts. And most of the people in this industry, you know, generally have Ivy League degrees and stuff like that. So I began as a visual artist and in college transitioned into literature and philosophy. But one of the reasons I gravitated towards prose writing was because I had complete autonomy and it didn't require any sort of capital, you know. If you just have paper and a pen and you're willing to learn and spend the time it takes, you can become a writer. But in 2008, you know, teaching college and looking at where the world was going, I had decided that with the publication of my novel, Galveston, I was going to try to use that to get a foot in the door in Hollywood. And everything's, you know, been going great since.
How were you able to do that? It's just, to me, like, as a person who's never participated at all in that culture, right. how does one make an entry into that crazy world?
Well, you know what I've found, and this is absolutely true in my experience, is that Hollywood is the last meritocracy left. I mean, you can go, I mean, look at me. I went from never working in this industry 2 years ago to now I'm running my own HBO show where I'm the sole writer and executive producer, and I'm writing a movie for Tom Cruise. I mean, is there any industry in the world where a total newcomer can advance that swiftly based on nothing but merit, you know? So the way I got started in it was my novel Galveston got published by Scribner in the summer of 2010. And a film agent who works with my literary agent managed to sell the option for it. And that's not much money, and it doesn't really mean a lot. It just means, you know, somebody's paying to option your work for a film. But I asked the film agent, you know, what do I have to do to get that screenplay writing job, just because I thought it would be a good way to break in. Because one of the things you need to break into the industry as a writer is lots and lots of samples of screenwriting. You know, the agent said, have you ever written a screenplay? And I said, no. And she said, we have to write screenplays. And then I asked them, well, how do you become, you know, a working television writer? Because it seems like in television, the writer has much more command over the material, and he does. And they said, basically, you needed to write an original pilot that's really great, and a spec script, which is a script of an existing show. And that needs to be really great. And if you have those two samples, they can start trying to break me in. So that summer, I think I wrote 7 scripts in like a month and a half. And it created like a lot of noise for me over here. And I had a lot of meetings and with various producers and things like that. So I was flying from Indiana to LA quite a bit that summer. And I ended up taking a staffing position on the first season of The Killing for AMC. And HBO gave me a blind pilot deal, which is a set amount of money for a pilot script. So with those two things, I left my job in academia and moved the family out to L.A. But, you know, that's basically how I broke in.
Sure.
I wrote seven scripts in a month and a half.
Pizzolatto's True Detectives is slated to begin airing in 2013. He's also working on the remake of the movie Magnificent Seven, starring Tom Cruise. Another recent graduate who's broken into the screenwriting business is Tony Toast, a poetry graduate from 2004. He studied and was a colleague of Nick Pizzolatto's. Toast's first book of poetry, Invisible Bride, won the prestigious Walt Whitman Award while he was still studying at the University of Arkansas. He later went on to publish another book of poetry, as well as a book of music criticism on Johnny Cash. He decided that he really wanted to focus on film, however. Unlike Pizzolatto, Toast does not live in L.A. He lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, but he has been writing for the TV series Longmire and is shopping television ideas right now. I was curious to find out about the transition from writing poetry to writing screenplays.
There's more kind of overlap than I think you'd imagine, because I think, like, especially in modern poetry, the image is the often the meaning-making unit in a poem. I might be a little old school in that, and old William Carlos Williams, provide a series of charged images, and then the mind will begin deriving emotions and making sense of those. In screenplays, a little bit like that, you're trying to stage structure, images, scenes, even with as little dialogue as possible, that make a kind of emotional, dramatic sense. And I think poetry was a good testing ground for that. Getting a sense of having an ear for the sound of words aloud, since you have to read your work with some kind, and have it hopefully have some kind of rhythmic authority. That kind of sense of the externality of language. So that's something I think, like, I'm kind of lucky that I didn't do fiction first, because even though I probably could have used a lot more practice on narrative structure, I never had the sense of internalized narrative and self-monologues going on that I think a lot of fiction rightly relies upon it. And so jumping into screenwriting, script writing, where everything has to be externalized, I didn't have to travel as far or shed as many habits that maybe somebody who'd been writing fiction for 10, 15 years would have to shed. And so that way it was a good training ground.
I'll be the first to admit that I don't watch TV all that often. So I wanted to find out from Toast exactly what Longmire was all about.
Longmire is a very cool, I think, show that just finished up its first season this summer on A&E. It was a pretty big success. It got renewed for a second season. It's pulled in kind of the biggest numbers that A&E's had for a drama so far. And it's about a widowed sheriff, about 50 years old, in rural Wyoming. And he's got this big, vast county that he oversees, and it's adjacent to an Indian reservation. And there's a kind of, it really has, it's interesting because it's, it melds a little bit. It's from the people who did The Closer. The executive producers all worked on The Closer and helped create that. And so there's that sense of a, if you're familiar with The Closer, there's a procedural, like, crime of the week element, but it's also much more character-based and psychologically curious about its characters and its crimes than maybe your the network version of a procedural, the cable version. So there, it melds that kind of template with a lot of the iconography of your traditional Western.
Since Toast wrote as a freelancer for Longmire, he's not sure how much he'll be writing for the season as it continues, but he's currently shopping television ideas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
This is Ozarks at Large. The holiday season's officially here, and that means many people are thinking about what gifts to give others or perhaps themselves. To help us is Ty Dennison. He is our tech ambassador. Welcome back.
Hey, Kyle. It's good to be back.
This is the time when many of the new electronic and digital entries into our world get on shelves, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the ads are everywhere right now. I don't know how much television you're watching, but they're wanting you to buy and they're wanting you to spend a lot. And so they've got a lot out there. They've put their best foot forward for the holiday season. So there's a lot of options to sort through.
Here's the thing. I have a radio. I have a laptop. I have a smartphone. I have a CD player. What else do I need?
Well, ecosystems are kind of becoming the new thing. And that's obviously a word that we're familiar with, but it's also becoming something that is a part of the technological landscape in that there are different pieces to what you entertain yourself with. You've got a tablet, you've got a phone, you've got your television, you've got a computer, you've got a gaming system. Different companies are creating ecosystems that allow for all of those pieces to communicate with one another and interact with one another. There are some great component pieces, things that aren't a part of an ecosystem, but by themselves are quality items, but with the movement that's happening in technology, buying into an ecosystem is kind of something you want to start considering in this, maybe this holiday season.
Well, does an ecosystem then mean that you become a blank household, you become an Apple household, or you become – do those parts have to come from the same technological firm?
Sadly, at this point, yes. Although Amazon is probably the company that's going to play nicest with letting you – put their ecosystem on other things because Amazon is a content manufacturer as opposed to some of the others. Their business, you know, Apple's business model is hardware. Microsoft's is a little of both. Google's is search. So they make their revenue in different ways, whereas Amazon just wants to sell you movies and books.
Right.
And so they'll let you read your movies, read your books and watch your movies
right.
on any device they can. And as a result, they've created an ecosystem that I've kind of bought into lately in that I drive quite a bit. I listen to Audible books.
Okay.
Audiobooks are great. And I've often thought to myself, I wish that I could read my book when I got home. I would drive and I'd have a driveway moment like I've often had here with KUAF with an audiobook and gone, man, I wish I could go inside and read this.
Just pick
up a book and read it. I wish they gave me the book with it because I don't want to walk around with my headphones on. Like my wife and children want to interact with me, or even later if I want to, you know, read it at home, I want to read.
Right.
And so I'd often thought that to myself. And lo and behold, a couple months ago, they came out with something called WhisperSync for Voice, and it allows Audible. Audible is a company that's owned by Amazon. It's a division of Amazon. Audible books to sync wirelessly, instantaneously with Kindle eBooks, and they give you a discounted copy. So if you buy the Amazon book first, they give you a discounted audiobook for a couple of dollars, or vice versa. You get the Audible book and it's WhisperSync ready. You get the Amazon book.
So in other words, you get out of your driveway and you're on page 75. You pick up your Kindle or a tablet with a Kindle app.
That's correct.
And it goes right to where you
right to stop. Where I hit stop listening. And so it's amazing. And so I went out and bought the cheapest Kindle so that I could have ebooks to read. I'm not a fan of backlit screens when it comes to prolonged reading, so I don't read books on my iPhone or a tablet or anything like that. I stare at a computer enough, so I want something that's not shining light in my face. And so I got the plain Kindle, and now I can read my books and they sync with my audio.
Does the WhisperSync itself cost anything, or is
nope,
that
that's absolutely
you just
free
have
as well.
the infrastructure and it's going
to
be
correct
free.
If you've got wow. the infrastructure to support it, Amazon's happy with you buying the content from them, and that's the way it is with all of their things. That's why they have ad-supported versions of their hardware, like the Kindle Fire, all the e-readers. Those are great gifts. They're quite affordable. They're all under $200. I think they're going to go on sale even further on Black Friday. And again, they just want you to be reading magazines and books and watching movies that you bought from them, and so they'll let you do it on any device, and they'll provide devices for you if you don't already have one to do so.
Okay, so if Apple has an ecosystem, Amazon has created one. Are there other ecosystems?
There are. Google's in the process of creating one. Apple's is probably the most robust. It's got a lot going on. It's the most mature. Google's doing something similar. There's a Google TV, and obviously the Nexus, the Galaxy 7, Nexus 7, excuse me, tablet is a great tablet. It's also very affordable, and it definitely gives stuff like the Kindle and the Nook HD a run for its money. But it's still not quite as ecosystem-driven as something like an Apple product. The Nexus phones as well, even in their commercials, show the ability to show things on the television. There's an app for that, and this is kind of where the issue is. In preparing for this, I tried to do the research to explain this is how it's done. I couldn't readily find that. I honestly, sadly, don't have an answer for the listeners that are like, well, I want to be able to do that with my Android phone. I can't tell you. You're going to have to go do some more research. The capability is there with Android, but you'll have to, I believe, have an app, a Google TV or a TV that has apps built into it to be able to. But there's nothing just as simple as your Apple TV shares with all your Apple devices. And that fragmentation within the Android world is an issue that they're still trying to sort out, and they want continuity, and it's just not there yet. But once it gets there, it's going to be a very vibrant ecosystem and very competitively priced as well.
You know, it used to be if I was going to buy a TV, it was just how big a screen do I want. That was the only decision I had to make. Actually, there was a time when you had to decide whether it was color or black and white. Now you've got to think about whether you're buying a TV with apps in it.
Right. What apps do you want in your TV? What do you want baked into it, and what you don't? And there hasn't been much breakthrough in televisions this season. They've just become more affordable, which is in and of itself is a breakthrough.
Right.
There's not a lot of sizzle to it. Not a lot of appeal in the, like, oh, I got to get the newest one. But you can certainly get a good quality TV to hang on your wall, because they're all 4 inches thin,
right,
if that, these days, and watch some good stuff in probably 720, if not 1080 resolution. So another area where there hasn't been a lot of change is the gaming console area. And there's one real player in there that has an ecosystem, and that's Microsoft with Xbox. Obviously, with an Xbox, you turn that, and they want you to turn that into your entertainment center, where you've got Netflix, you've got Hulu Plus, you've got HBO Go.
All through your Xbox.
All through your Xbox. You still have to pay for subscriptions or have a subscription like with HBO. However, you can view all of that content there. They also have an app called Smart Glass, which allows you to watch videos from your tablet or smartphone or iPad on your Xbox. So it gives you that AirPlay feature from any phone or any tablet to your Xbox at this point. So they've kind of tried to let you bring your stuff to the table, and we'll see more people do that. Call of Duty 2, if you're into gaming, that's the game of the season, and that's obviously available on Xbox. So for people who want an ecosystem that's got strong gaming, you're going to want to get into the Xbox system. My guess is you've already got one if you're into gaming, but there's a lot of fun new things happening within the world of Xbox and Microsoft. Look for stuff to develop with the Surface tablet, which is a great tablet, a little expensive. It's Microsoft's first step into the tablet computing world, and so it's not as eloquent as it could be, but it's going to improve. And we know Microsoft's going to bring their A game in that market.
What else? Okay, so if the TVs are affordable but without a little bit of sizzle, and you can build ecosystems, anything else this holiday season?
Yeah, you obviously don't have to have an ecosystem. There are some great things out there that don't have ecosystems. If you're someone who is looking at maybe losing cable, you don't want that expense, you come out the other side of our Financial Times and you're looking at ways you can save money, something like the Boxy Box is a great way to do that. It's a digital it's a box that's under I believe it's on $100 right now, and Walmart's starting to carry them. It allows for an antenna so that you can have live television to come in and acts as your converter. It has a DVR built into it, and then it has apps such as Netflix, YouTube, things like that, so that you can still access that digital content and get it to your television. So that's something to look into. That again, doesn't communicate with anything else, and there aren't ways to get into that yet. It's similar to the Roku box, like you'd mentioned. There are Rokus out there. None of them are allowing live television, but they're great ways to get digital content onto your television easily and affordably. Roku's got a deal worked out with HBO Go as well. A lot of people like having that HBO content on demand real easily. And so as far as set-top boxes and television communication, that's good. Nintendo's got some great stuff coming out. If you've got particularly younger children, most older guys or guys and girls gravitate towards more serious gaming systems like the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3. But the Wii U stuff is pretty neat in that you can be playing a game and someone wants to watch television, you can pause the game that you're playing on the television and take your little Wii U, which is basically a tablet, and pick up the game where you left off on your tablet. And someone can watch television from there. So they can navigate and wait away and go back to, you know, put on the latest episode of Breaking Bad, start watching it, and your child can probably leave the room if you're watching Breaking Bad, depending on the age.
Yes.
And continue playing, you know, Mario Kart or whatever they're playing. And so that's a really neat feature, and it can kind of probably relieve some tension within the households. And another really neat one is the Nook. Barnes & Noble is, man, I rooted for them for a while. Kindle finally bought me out with this WhisperSync stuff, but Barnes & Noble has consistently put out stuff that's just a little higher quality and a little better featured, but they just don't get the press and they don't have an ecosystem, so to speak. Their new tablet, the Nook HD, allows for profiles. So none of these other tablets have profiles on them.
Orwellian to me so far, so help me out with profile.
The tablet doesn't profile you per se.
Okay.
You create a profile. It allows for multiple users on one tablet. And that's one area where the tablet market has really failed, and a lot of people have complained. So I'm using my iPad, and I want my wife to be able to use it or my children to be able to use it. We're all using the same iPad with the same accounts. Mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble has overcome that issue with having profiles on their tablet so that I take the Nook HD from you and I hit a few buttons and the tablet knows that it's me. And so I can have things arranged the way I want them, have things that other people don't have, make purchases through my information, things like that.
What about phones? Anything great with phones this year? I know the iPhone 5 came out earlier.
iPhone 5 came out and everyone mocked it for being longer. But it's a good phone. There are plenty of other – the new Android phones are all pretty happening with the Note and the Galaxies and the Nexus phones. Windows Phone is still developing. Microsoft's trying to get a horse in that race, and they're doing good. We just kind of have to be patient with Microsoft sometimes at this point, which is bizarre considering where they've come from. Mm-hmm. But once they get involved, they generally start to put out quality. BlackBerry is trying so hard, poor BlackBerry, to remain relevant, and they've got a big big launch in January, so they'll miss the holiday rush. So no one will be getting a BlackBerry for Christmas. And if they are, I'm sure they'll be complaining about it on Twitter.
Anything else we should know as we look toward holiday gifts for electronic and tech?
There are all kinds of ways to spend your money, so just look for something that interests you and make sure it's quality. There's plenty of ways to vet the stuff that's out there these days with the internet, consumer reports, reviews through online purchasing systems. So, you know, don't be scared to look into new things.
Ty, thank you very much.
You bet, Kyle.
Ty Dennison is our tech guide to what's new and interesting in the digital world. He'll be back for another session in December.
It may not be so marked on your desk calendar, but today is Fibonacci Day because the date follows the Fibonacci sequence.
That's a pattern where each number is the sum of the previous two. So if you write down November 23rd as 1123, you have a Fibonacci sequence.
And to help us celebrate this occasion, Ozarks at Largest Christina Thomas recently talked to Dr. Edmund Harris, an assistant clinical professor in the University of Arkansas Math Department.
I have to admit, when your email came in, it was the first time I'd heard of Fibonacci Day.
Well, I've started this series of picking a certain day of the week and, you know, kind of fun things. Like I started off with National Waffle Day, and I got to go to Waffle House.
Yeah.
And so, I look at all these interesting calendars.
Well, that's, it's an interesting way, and I think an interesting way to look at specific things through the year and change them around a bit.
And the
Fibonacci numbers are one of the most popular bits of mathematics, so it's the sequence is fairly simple. You start with the number one, and you just add the two previous numbers before it. So, well, we only had a one, so we can assume the other thing's zero. So you have 1, 1. Then you're adding one and one to get two. Now the last two numbers are one and two, so you get three. The last two numbers are two and 3, so you get 5, 8, 13, and so on.
It is really simple. It's just if you know your basic addition.
Yep.
And
the nice thing is it's really simple, but this and some other patterns can lead into very advanced mathematics. One of the important things with the Fibonacci numbers is that if you take one number and divide it by the previous one, you get closer and closer, as the Fibonacci's go on, it gets closer and closer to a number called the golden ratio.
Okay, so you mean not just in the beginning of it, like 13 divided by 8. So we're talking about further on in the sequence. And
well, it gets closer and closer to it, okay. This thing. So 13 by 8 would be one, a number pretty close. And then you take the next one, which would be 21 divided by 13. And so on like this.
Well, so what is the golden ratio?
So the golden ratio is, one of the things is architect's favorite number. And it's a particular proportion. The exact value is 1 plus the square root of 5 all over 2. But there's a geometric way to describe it. If you take a rectangle and you cut off a square, you're left with a rectangle of the same proportions.
Okay.
And this sort of similarity, the self-similarity property that it has, means it's very powerful for if you're designing buildings or shapes. Using this proportion will give you a whole load of similarities and interesting behaviors. And people have made claims that it was one of the fundamental ideas in Greek architecture. Sadly, those are not. It's hard to justify, but certainly in Christopher Wren's architecture in London, places like St. Paul's Cathedral and the churches he designed in London, he heavily used this proportion. And many architects today use it to help design their buildings. And you probably have this proportion in your pocket because it's also the proportion of a standard credit card.
Okay. That's funny.
In part because it has this reputation of being a very beautiful proportion. There's also, you know, people have talked about it being the perfect proportion for beauty and trying to find it in great works of art. And some of that is it's difficult for me as someone who's constantly going out and trying to persuade people that mathematics is interesting and they should pay more attention. And then you have an area and people are paying a lot of attention to mathematics saying it's awesome, it's cool. Well, no, actually, it's not really there. It is certainly in things like in sunflowers and other plants, the
how actually, so? Like in the big.
Well, this comes back to the Fibonacci numbers, actually.
Right.
And if you look at the head of a sunflower.
So the large center.
Yeah.
On one of those tall sunflowers.
Yeah. And you'll see these sort of curly lines going round. And if you count the number of lines there are going round, that will be a Fibonacci number. Then you can sort of see lines coming the other way against them, and you count those. That will either be the previous Fibonacci number or the next Fibonacci number.
So, okay, so you count them going one way, and you get a Fibonacci number.
Yeah.
You count them going the other way, and you're going to get the one that was right before the number that you originally got, or the one right after the one that you originally got. So earlier you mentioned Greek architecture. So this sequence was discovered or found, made a really long time ago. I mean, because Greek architecture is what goes all the way back to BCs.
Yeah.
Right? So do you know anything about the man, Fibonacci, and how he stumbled upon this sequence?
Well, he was also called Leonardo of Pisa. And actually, the Fibonacci numbers are not his greatest achievement at all. He was one of the key figures in bringing Arabic numerals into Europe, replacing the old Roman numeral system. And so that's a
Are those
a huge
the numbers
change.
We use now?
Yes.
Okay.
the interesting thing, one of the reasons that they didn't come in for a long time was because they were associated with Islam and they were considered to be, Arabic. And so people were, good Christians in Western Europe at the time said, no, we don't want this. But at some point, the greater usefulness of the system, it's a more powerful system. It's also a system that's easier to teach. If you think you have enough problems with doing arithmetic, try doing it in Roman numerals.
Right. I mean, I when I see a Roman numeral, I have to count.
But imagine doing a multiplication like VI times XVI. But in this book where he presents the system, one of the things he talks about is actually looking at rabbits and saying that you have rabbits and you have pairs of rabbits.
Does this go to rabbits multiplying?
This is how the Fibonacci numbers come out.
Okay.
You have pairs of rabbits, and in each generation, the pair of rabbits have two babies. And they are babies for one generation, then they become adults. And then when they become adults, they'll pair up and they'll start having babies. And this is not a particularly good model of how rabbits actually breed, but it does give you the Fibonacci numbers, because if you think how many rabbits are there in each generation, well, it's the answer is how many rabbits were there in the generation before and the generation before that added together. So that would be your 2, 3, and so on. So that's where we get the Fibonacci numbers from, or why they're associated with his name.
I saw that stockbrokers use it somehow in the stock market in predicting trades.
There's a variety of ways that it can come in. I tend to be a bit of a skeptic on some of these things. I know that the stock market thing, some people have been able to use it to make money. But I think making money in the stock market is more to do with magic than science. There's a lot of instinct, but one of the interesting things that it will do for you, give you patterns that are not periodic. And so if you use this golden ratio, it's called an irrational number. You can't state it as a fraction. And so if you look at that behavior against a behavior that's happening, a behavior that's happening every golden ratio days against a behavior that's happening every day, you're going to get some different, your patterns aren't going to repeat. And that can be a useful, not repeating in your patterns can be useful in your trading.
I think I understand. what else? I mean, where do we see it in popular culture today? Are there other places?
Well, there are some people who use it in music. Again, you can use it as a time signature, as one that isn't going to resolve completely. It will come back sort of almost to itself, and then you can extend it. People have used it in music, in art and architecture, as we've discussed. It's, I mean, more concretely, it turns up in the pentagon. So if you draw a pentagon and then you take
just
points,
the five-sided.
Yeah, the five-sided regular shape, and then you take the points which are two points which are two apart. Well, if you're the edge of your pentagon is length one, this diagonal will be length golden ratio. And so in anything where you, any system patterning, going back to, for example, Islamic tiling art, you're going to have this golden ratio turning up if you've got this rotation.
Okay. It sounds like it's everywhere.
It does. But, you know, I think that's what's called the law of small numbers. And that basically says that there are these very common numbers, and they just turn up in lots of places. So the number three occurs a lot of times because it's a very simple number, and so there's a lot of things which we can count to three.
And it's in the Fibonacci sequence.
It is. So the golden ratio is similar. It's a very, it's one of the simplest of this other family of numbers. I think where it'd be nice if people sort of said, okay, how can we take this further?
They needed to be expanded upon.
There's actually a whole world out of these numbers. You can, another way to do it is to take, instead of taking the two numbers and adding them together, take three numbers and add them together. That gives you another sequence, which is called the Tribonacci. three rather than Fibonacci.
Not named after anybody. That's
just
taken
a
from
corruption
that.
Of... Right. So there's a whole family and sort of different form of numbers. In mathematics, these numbers are the solutions of polynomials with integer coefficients. But there's a lot more happening, and the Fibonacci numbers should be like an invitation to investigate more of this mathematics. Rather
than start simple and...
Yeah. People forget that mathematics is really the study of the simplest things we can understand.
Well, it's you're saying investigating, and it reminds me of this show that I mentioned, you know, the MathNet on PBS when I was a kid, you know, probably six, that, you know, that I remember the Fibonacci numbers. But, you know, it was like a group of kids that solved crimes, I think, with, you know, using numbers. So, I mean, that's kind of the same thing, right? You know, introducing math to young kids to show them it's cool.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, Fibonacci Day, Friday, November 23rd, which is actually the first four numbers in the number sequence, 1, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, so. I did work that out eventually.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Harris.
Thank you.
Ozarks at Largest Christina Thomas talked with Dr. Edmund Harris, an associate clinical professor in the University of Arkansas Math Department, about the contributions by Fibonacci. Today, 1, 1, 2, 3 is a day that follows the Fibonacci sequence.
It is Friday, November 23rd, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Have you ever heard the Henry Rollins riff about how hard it is to get somewhere to perform?
I have
not. Do
you
realize what I've been through to get to you today?
Over the river and through the woods?
No, over past the mall and down the street.
Are you a Black Friday shopping kind of person?
I used to be, and then I came to my senses.
Yeah.
I did it once, kind of as an anthropological experiment to see what happened. And it's not my cup of tea. It's not for me.
I'm hit or miss. If there's something that I really want, maybe I'll, and there's a group of us, because then it's, I think it's entertaining if it's a social event.
Mm-hmm. Well, besides which, you're too small to go on your own. You'll get hurt.
I've got pointy elbows.
I spent a Black Friday 3 or 4 years ago. This is when I was still doing play-by-play for the women, the University of Arkansas women's basketball team, and they were in a tournament in Mexico over Thanksgiving. And I couldn't sleep, and I got up and I walked down to the ocean, the Gulf of Mexico, and watched pelicans dive for fish for about an hour on Black Friday morning. I said, this is my kind of Black Friday.
Absolutely. So I'm not out in the middle of it. When I get out of here, I'm going home where it's safe.
Okay.
However,
You've
got to go out this weekend because there's more Christmas things going on.
Oh, now we're in top gear.
Yes, we are. It is the Christmas Parade of the Ozarks at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Emma Avenue in Springdale. The theme this year is candy canes and Christmas carols.
Hooray.
And imagine there are lots of horses and
candy canes.
School bands and candy canes. The parade starts at the rodeo grounds at the intersection of Emma and 265 and proceeds on Emma through downtown Springdale. And the rain date is 6 o'clock on November 26th. That would be Monday and my birthday. Mm-hmm. Also this weekend, it is the Holiday Hoopla starting Saturday in downtown Rogers. Whole month of events designed to help the community enjoy the holiday season.
Great.
The kickoff ceremony is at 5 o'clock tomorrow with the lighting of the brand new Christmas tree, 27 feet tall, still not Silver Dollar City, but that's all right. School of Rock will play holiday music, Ballet West Side will dance, there will be hot chocolate and cider and all those things. And then it continues up through Christmas. Also today, Santa's in the park at Basin Spring Park in Eureka Springs.
Dude gets around.
He does.
He does. It's amazing. On Saturday, there's a county fair Christmas starting at the fairgrounds. Yes, that's what that's called in Fayetteville. Continues through December 22nd. And movie night at Lawrence Plaza in Bentonville is Elf at 6:30.
Oh. All
right. On the 25th, which is Sunday, Winter Wonderland theme tours of the Hawkins House begin. Mm-hmm. And on Tuesday, there's a Season's Greetings concert featuring all of the performers from UAFS at 7 o'clock at Stubblefield Center. And we'll have more next week.
And something that's coming up on December 1st, I just want to point out, in Mansfield, Arkansas, they have their annual Christmas parade. But this is what every parade should have. It starts at 11, and if you go to the downtown gazebo in Mansfield, you know what you get? Free beans and cornbread.
Wow.
Oh.
That's how to have a Christmas parade right there.
I thought you were going to say, but you were the MC.
No. If they offered me the free beans and cornbread, I'd do it, yes.
Yeah, see, we work for peanuts or beans and cornbread and hot chocolate.
Exactly.
Have fun, guys.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. I'm going to begin this next conversation with a disclaimer. The Simply Sinatra Christmas concert from the Fort Smith Symphony is sold out, has been for months. But John Jetter is the music director of the Fort Smith Symphony, and he tells me that it's always worth a call just to see if someone can't be there on Saturday, December 1st.
Yes, how are you?
I'm fine.
Yes, we're talking about Christmas already, and I believe in late September. Our Christmas concert is Saturday, December 1st. I believe in late September we did sell out for this concert. And yes, we're thinking about, not this year, but potentially adding, you know, a second performance. Before we get to the concert details, please, we are working very hard with our subscribers who can't attend at turning tickets around that get turned in. So if you're interested in attending a concert that is sold out, please call, ask to be on a waiting list. I think there's already a waiting list for this concert, but we're doing a really good job at trying to sneak people in.
Have you had the phenomenon yet where people are outside, you know, with the tickets up in the air as if they might,
I think there has been some scalping, actually. Cool.
Are you serious?
Although people, they haven't gotten bold enough with asking for double for the tickets, right. But go ahead. It's a neat problem to have. Our Christmas concert is called a Simply Sinatra Christmas, and our guest artist is Steve Lippia. He is a vocalist, performer, outstanding singer. He is not a Frank Sinatra impersonator. This is not even a Sinatra tribute concert. It's really about Sinatra's music. Steve actually does sound a lot like Sinatra, but it's a neat opportunity to do some of my favorite music and a lot of people's favorite music in symphonic format. We will have the orchestra on stage with a big band kind of in the middle. And we will be performing pieces that Sinatra recorded on all those Christmas albums that he did. So there are many Sinatra albums, as well as some of the classic Sinatra hits. So we're doing the First Noel, I'll Be Home for Christmas, Let It Snow, White Christmas, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, Jingle Bells, The Christmas Waltz, I think, Come Fly With Me, All the Way, Summer Wind, Lady is a Tramp, New York, New York, I've Got You Under My Skin, and Luck Be a Lady. That's at least the plan at this point. And they're full symphonic arrangements. Steve's hugely busy. I mean, it's just amazing. His shows do so well. And he has his original background, I think, is Las Vegas. I think he's still based in Las Vegas. So he's got that flavor to him.
I love the Sinatra and Nelson Riddle albums, the stuff he did with Red Norvo, that classic album that was recorded in Australia. Big band, orchestra, vocalist.
Yes.
it's hard, in my opinion, to really beat this for a live experience.
That's right.
This sort of
a lot
of powerful stuff.
Exactly, exactly. And Steve's a pretty high energy entertainer. And there's kind of a story about this. I hope, and I may have mentioned. I don't know. I've a lot of interviews. I may have even mentioned it. But Steve has been doing the Simply Sinatra concerts with orchestra for a number of years now. And I called his manager a few years ago and said, "Does Steve do a Christmas show?" And his manager was very nice, said, "You know, we'd love to do it. We've talked about it, but we just can't. We just, you know, we've got to get arrangements of these Christmas songs. It's kind of expensive to do it. But, you know, could you call Steve and just try to convince him?
Nudge him.
So I called him and I said, "You know, if you were to do, first of all, we'd love to have you, but as synonymous as symphony is with Christmas, I think the general public would be surprised how little music is available to an orchestra at Christmas time. There's a lot of copyrighted stuff that you can't get. A lot of the music that's available is rental only. It's very hard to go out and purchase music for a Christmas program. And you think, well, you know, a lot of it's just the same stuff. Or if you're not going to do popular Christmas songs, what are your other choices? Well, there's Nutcracker
Messiah,
and the Messiah,
and there you go.
So as I recall, leaving it with Steve was like, well, yeah, maybe we'll look into it. And then about 2 weeks later, his manager called back very enthusiastically and said, "I don't know what you said, but we're on." And we're getting the arrangements made, and we will basically try to accommodate any date you want, because thanks for helping. So that's kind of how it worked out, and I think he's had a lot of success with the show. And for me at Christmas, I find I've got some Sinatra albums, and he's one of my go-to people for the holidays, actually. Just something
absolutely.
About it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people, obviously, based on ticket sales, a lot of people are very enthusiastic about this concert. So it's Saturday evening, December 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center. If you would like to attend, call the office and ask them, how do I get tickets? What's the best game plan? And I think it'll be a really unique evening.
What does it sound like? Let's say you're in the lobby or, you know, that foyer area before the hall. Can you hear out there? I mean,
no.
Okay. So you can't get
no,
this
that
cheap.
Doesn't work. No,
okay.
No.
Okay.
And you know, maybe this is a concert that we should, you know, I think originally what was going to happen is we had looked into Steve doing a concert, I think a similar concert the next day, just with the big bands. We were going to sort of help them do that. It didn't quite work out. But we're all for having, you know, these sort of performances kind of, you know, close by. It kind of helps the performer. But I think this will be really well attended. And I know it's going to be well attended. But if it is sold out, but please call and try to get on a list. And we'll try really hard to get you in.
Do what
we'll sneak
can.
You in somehow.
And you know what? Plan ahead for January 26th. Because there's another concert there.
Yeah.
Irving Kong will be on
there. That's right. January 26th.
So if you don't get to this one, learn your lesson.
And the John Williams concert in April is almost sold out. And where we are is we're at about 91% of the hall just on season tickets. So there aren't a lot of individual tickets for the entire season. And even May, there aren't many seats left. So, it's a great problem to have. And I would just, you know, obviously people are enthusiastic about it. So I would encourage people to call.
Happy
holidays.
It's a
great year. Thank you. Happy holidays.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 23rd of November, 2012. It's the anniversary of the debut of the Jukebox, 1889, at the Palais Royal Saloon in San Francisco. You put a nickel in the slot, and you listen to the music through a sort of stethoscope tube. 1903, on this date, Enrico Caruso made his American debut at the Metropolitan Opera House in Rigoletto. He was the son of an auto mechanic in Naples. His father tried to get him to work in a factory, but the boy ran away from home at the age of 16, supported himself singing at weddings and funerals. His American debut, 1903, on this date, went pretty well, and he got better and better. With each performance, by the end of the season, audiences at the Met were shouting and screaming his name. And less than 3 months after that, he made some recordings for the Victor Company. And Caruso's voice had a quality that shone through all the static in those early 78s. And his singing, his popularity, helped to transform the phonograph from a sort of curiosity into a household item. He became the first vocal recording star. Caruso said his success could be attributed to six things: a big chest, a big mouth, 90% memory, 10% intelligence, lots of hard work, and something in the heart. And it's the birthday of a man about whom many, many books have been written, William H. Bonney, Jr., born New York City, 1859, who came to be known as Billy the Kid after the family moved out to Kansas and then to Colorado and finally New Mexico, where he turned to crime, stole horses, rustled cattle, got involved in a feud in Lincoln County, New Mexico, and in behalf of his boss, John Tunstall, Billy the Kid shot and killed people on the other side, for which he was hunted down by the sheriff, Pat Garrett, and killed in 1881. Here's a poem for today by Gray Shulman entitled God's Letters. When God thought up the world, the alphabet letters whistled in his crown where they were engraved with a pen of fire, each wanting to begin the story of creation. S said, "I am soul, I can shine out from within your creatures." God replied, "I know that, but you are sin, too." L said, "I am love, and I brush away malice." God rejoined, "Yes, but you are lie, and falsehood is not what I had in mind." P said, "I am praise, and where there's a celebration, I perform in my purple coat." "Yes," roared God, "but at the same time, you are pessimism, the other side of praise," and so forth. All the letters had two sides or more. None was pure. There was a clamor in paradise, words, syllables shouting to be seen and heard for the glory of the new heavens and earth. God fell silent, wondering, how can song rise from that commotion? Rather than speculate, God chose B, who had intoned bashfully, boldly, "Blessed is his name," and he made A first in the alphabet for admitting, "I am all," a limitation and a possibility. A poem by Gray Shulman, God's Letters, from Days of Wonder, New and Selected Poems, published by Houghton Mifflin Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances, art, food, wine, culture. You can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Figure 5.
I've been to Figure 5. I've driven through Figure 5. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellens.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Christina Thomas will be with me Sunday morning for weekend edition of Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9. I said we would give away the Billy Elliot tickets today. We just don't have time. We'll do it on Monday.
Okay.
All right.
Something to look forward to.
There you go. So have a great weekend. Hope the holidays are going well.
Yes.
And I will see you again very soon.
Have a good day.